Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. I'm Phil Carroll, and today we're joined by Peter Krugel, CEO of Mast Energy Developments. Welcome back, Peter. How's things?
Hi, Phil. Yes, very good. Thank you.
Good. Good. So obviously the company just announced an updated version of the company's corporate presentation, and obviously that's available on the website. But do you want to just take us through the presentation?
Yes, thank you, Phil, and thank you for the opportunity. We spent quite a bit of time to refresh and update MED's business presentation because we've been busy with many things the past while, and since I took over as CEO a few months ago, and we thought it would be meaningful to put all of that in a new refreshed presentation, you know, get that out to the market in order for our existing investors and also any new interested investors to see exactly what we've been doing, what we're busy with, and I think most specifically what our business model entails. So I'd be happy to take you through the presentation. I think if we can start with the problem in the market, which also then provides us with an opportunity. So essentially, you know, that's what MED does. We address the acute energy need problem in the UK market. There's a very big capacity crunch at the moment, as we all know, and the energy crisis. Our business model addresses a part of that problem in a very specific segment. So we participate in the flexible segment of the UK energy power market. So that essentially is due to the energy mix at the moment. The UK is becoming more and more renewable focused, and that means that when the sun does not shine or the wind does not blow, those renewable energy generators can't produce, and that puts the national grid stability at risk, and that's where we come in. So we get pinged when there's a demand for generation, and we then, on a flexible basis, provide energy to the national grid to stabilize the grid and to ensure that there are no blackouts. So that's the opportunity for us. We feel that our business model is in line with the commitment to net zero. It's an enabler of renewable energy. It goes hand in hand. So as I explained, the moment that the sun doesn't shine or the wind doesn't blow, you know, we come on stream. We use natural gas to fuel our reciprocating engines, and that produces low carbon emission electricity generation. We've partnered with industry leading service providers in order to implement our business model, and I'll talk a bit about that as we go along. Essentially, our assets are structured. We've got, and I'll talk about each project just now, but we do small gas fired power plants, less than 50 megawatts in size. It is dispatchable, meaning it can be turned off and on very rapidly, usually a reaction time of about 2 minutes. It can run over continuous periods of time. We target up to 4,000 hours of runtime per annum. And just to put that into context, so base load is about 8,000 hours per annum, and that means that you run 24/7. But we are not a base load generator. We're a flexible generator, so we only switch on when there's a demand for our specific electricity generation. And that's why we target up to 4,000 hours per annum. Our engine sizes are typically between 1.5 and 4.5 megawatts in size, and that allows us to generate low emissions and low noise electricity. Very important for the environment. And all our sites are unmanned and dispatched remotely, you know, which also saves quite a bit of time and money on managing the site. So that's the way that we do it. With regard to our business case, our ultimate strategic intent is to build a total portfolio of 300 megawatts, of which we've already taken a definitive step toward. And I'll talk about that just now. So we are targeting the 300 megawatt portfolio over the next 36 to 58 months. As I've explained, we invest in small-scale flexible power sites to respond to the needs of an evolving energy market. We've optimized costs and time to commissioning. We've done this now. It's not an idea on paper any longer. And we've talked about that before. I think that's the crux of the matter. MED is already a proven concept. We've got assets that we own already and that are under development and or in construction. And we already have a flagship asset in production and already earning cold hard cash. So we've got a blueprint of how to do this. We can very easily scale that up in order to get to the 300 megawatts. And ultimately, it all ties into our long-term offtake contract in order to secure our revenue. This slide is very important. I realized that the market did not understand our development process. So we, on a very simplistic basis, said, what are our key steps to get from looking at a site and then actually getting into production, starting to earn revenue, and making sure that the revenue earned are per expectation. So these eight steps that's outlined here essentially boils down our development process, starting with the project identification, due diligence, and acquisition. And that's typically what we've done on our most recent two new acquisitions, in Le Plain and Southern Road. Once we've done that, and we have ownership of the projects, we proceed with the rest of the steps. In the development process, which is essentially the grid and gas connection, the planning permission, construction agreements, power purchase agreement, then CapEx financing, and then we go into construction, into production, and then it comes down to site operational performance management. So that's essentially our development process. It's very clear, it's very simple, it's something that we've, as I've said just now, gotten into a very well-defined blueprint framework, which we can implement very easily and scale up. Typically, our development process from start to finish takes between 9 and 12 months. So that also gives an idea as to are we going to build this out going forward. With regards to our revenue generation model, that's also something we felt that the market did not clearly understand. So we put together this simple slide to explain that. So essentially, what it boils down to is that our input is the natural gas pipe. We start via a fixed gas connection from the GB natural gas grid. So that's where we source our gas from. We've got long-term gas supply contracts with various market leaders, such as Corona. So we've got a fair margin of security with regards to our natural gas supply. Then that is used in a process on-site, where the gas is then turned into electricity via our reciprocating gas engines. And the output of that is obviously the electricity generated, which we then export into the national grid. Our revenue generation will come from our offtake EPA agreement with Sutra, and that's typically based on site per site between 7 and 15 years, and our gross profit margin target is 30%. With regard to our investment case, and that's one of the first things that we look at when we target new acquisitions, is our minimum investment threshold of unlevered internal rate of return per project of between 15 and 22%. And that's our base case based on our independent financial modeling. All our assets are based in Great Britain. We've got locked in long-term PPA offtake agreements. Each project has immediate commercialization once funding is secured. And with regards to our pipeline, in order to get to the 300 megawatts, we've got exclusive rights to purchase shovel-ready sites, and we've got a strong pipeline. We've referred to the next 100 megawatts already being on the table that we're looking at. Looking forward, our current business model is based on natural gas as our fuel source, but we all know that the world is changing and changing. So we've already started looking at sustainability and continuity alternative options, and we are very flexible in that. In that sense, we can very easily change the fuel source of our existing assets and engines, and that could be anything from green hydrogen to biomass gas, and then also to complement that with a long-duration storage. So we feel that we are very well geared looking into the future, and we will transition into that in order to stay relevant within the next few years. With regard to our current projects, we've got about circa 30 megawatts under ownership at the moment. And, you know, that's a definitive step toward getting to the 300 megawatts. If we just quickly run through each of our current projects, which we've discussed before, is our current flagship project is Firebridge. That's a fully operational site that's already in production. Recently announced, a few months ago, we announced the maiden numbers on Firebridge, and recently we provided an update on that. Very attractive number coming out of Firebridge at the moment. And we are very proud of what we've done with Firebridge to prove concept. Then going on to Bordersley is our second most advanced project at this stage. It's in construction, and we expect that to be completed fairly soon. We had a few challenges there this year, which we've talked about previously and which is explained in our interim results that came out earlier this year. But a lot of progress has been made, and we feel confident that we're going to take the next step on Bordersley fairly soon. And that will then hopefully be our second site in production within the next while. Then on to Rochdale, which was our third acquisition post-IPO. Under development at this stage, and then the same with our two most recent acquisitions being Hendlip and Sather. Looking at our expected timeline to completion of each of our projects under development at this stage, as I explained, Bordersley is the next cab in the rank, followed by Rockdale and then Hendlip and Sather. And we are working towards meeting these target dates as best possible. Just looking at our management and governance, we've got Louis Couture, which is our non-executive chairman. He's also the CEO of our largest shareholder, being Kiva Energy PLC. Then we've got myself, and we've got Paul Fenter, who is the former CEO of MED, and which is now a non-executive director. And then we've got our independent non-executive director, Dominic Cranwell. Our partners in our business model are very important to us. They form the cornerstone of what we do on a daily basis, starting with Statkraft, who's our offtake partner. We spent, at the start of our journey, we spent quite a bit of time going to market and looking at all the leading route to market providers out there. And ultimately, we decided on Statkraft because we firmly believe that they are the best at what they do, and that they can provide us with the maximum revenue profile, which we are seeing coming through. So we've partnered with Statkraft on our current sites in order to take our electricity. And we've got long-term PPA contracts with them on each of our sites. We also have partnered with Apura, who's essentially our owner's engineer. And they've got very in-depth experience in the reserve power market in the UK. And they've commissioned and installed over 70 megawatts of energy projects to date. And they are also a very important part of what we do. And then our other key partners with regards to project development is the EPC and O&M contractors. Of Clark, which is the EPC contractor, they are the leading Yenbacher EPC contractor in the UK. They are also the sole authorized distributor of Yenbacher gas engines in the UK. So they are the market leader. And Cooper Ostland, which is our O&M provider on specifically Firebridge at this stage, they take care of the day-to-day maintenance. And then finishing with just a quick glance at our key corporate data, our shareholding, which is currently sitting at 70% founder shareholding, of which Kibo is a big part, 30% in public hands at this stage. Our net asset value, and that's just based on accounting book values, at about 10 million as we speak. Our shares and issue, market cap, etc., just to get a general sense of our corporate data. And that concludes the presentation. We feel that this gives a very good overview of what MED has been doing, what we are up to at the moment, and what we plan to do going forward. I think it, in a very straightforward way, shows that we don't work with ideas on paper any longer. We've got proof of concept. We are earning cold hard cash, and there's a very, very real and very attractive investment opportunity in MED in a very exciting market, which is the energy sector.
Very good, Peter. I think a good, concise view of MAST and MAST Energy. Interesting comment or interesting timeline that you've got there. So you would hope that by the end of 2023, at the very least, you will have all of the ones that you have currently online and producing. Now, that's what it looked like anyway, nine to 12 months from now. So that would be 30 megawatts or thereabouts in production. Based on what's been happening already with the one that is in production in Pybridge, what sort of revenues do you think are likely to be generated on an annualized basis at that point?
That is a good question, Kevin. And yes, our plan is definitely to have all 3 megawatts currently under ownership in production during and up to the end of 2023. Based on our current assessment of what's happening in the market and also our financial modeling, which is done by Napsys, which is a market leader with regards to energy data points in the UK. We expect revenues coming out of our circa 30 megawatt portfolio of between 10 and 12 million pounds per annum. And we feel that's a fairly conservative view. That's our base case target.
That's what you're allowed to say.
That's what I'm allowed to say. And hopefully we surprise on the upside, yes.
Yeah. So based on also your profit margin, that was basically 30%, but you did say it's running a little bit higher than that. But for the sake of argument, let's use 30%. That gives you 3.6 million of profit before tax, I take it.
Yes, that's correct. That's the expectation.
And based on that, value or 3.6 million with obviously increasing revenues from other ones that you're going to be buying, I presume that should give you a valuation in this sort of utility sector of 30 to 40 million pounds market capitalization, you would imagine.
Yes, that's correct, Kevin. And you know, so our pipeline is also a very important part of our growth strategy, and we plan and are working towards getting to the first 100 megawatts as quickly as possible. I think we are going to take definitive further steps in that regard during 2023. As I've said, our next 100 megawatts are already on the table. We're in varying stages of negotiations of those acquisitions. So we firmly focus on building out the portfolio during next year.
Yeah, it all looks very positive. You got a bit of a shock from the Chancellor this week. So after reading the small print, tell us that you wiped your brow and were feeling quite relieved about it.
Are you referring to the electricity generator levy that Jeremy Hunt obviously announced yesterday in the autumn statement that there was going to be a 45% tax on companies that generate electricity? Obviously, initially, I'm sure that when you read that, there was a little bit of concern there. But do you want to tell us what you found, Peter?
Yes, we kept a very close eye on that yesterday. We expected that to be announced during the autumn statement yesterday, and that indeed was the case. So they did announce the new electricity generation levy at 45%, which is going to be on top of corporate tax. So it's not deductible from your income statement for corporate tax purposes. So effectively, the effective tax rate for an electricity generator will be close to 70%. All things being equal, which is significant. But I think in a certain sense, it forms part of what the energy market is doing at the moment. Electricity generators are making unprecedented profits at the moment. So I think that's the government's view, is that you know, some of those profits needs to be coming back into the hands of the government and the public purse. And we had a very close look at that, because in MED's case, I think is a bit different than a renewable energy generator, because they do not necessarily have the associated increase in input costs, specifically from a fuel source perspective. You know, obviously the sun is free and the wind is free if it's blowing and if it's shining, just to be said as well. And that's exactly what the government then said at the end of the day, is that this levy is predominantly applicable to renewable energy generators, which do not have that associated increase in cost. So gas generators are specifically excluded from this levy, which we feel is very good news for MED. We were very concerned about that levy and the impact it could have on economic return from our business model. But we are relieved to see that it's not applicable to us. And so our
news.
Current outlook and forecast remains unchanged from that perspective.
Yeah, it's good news. And also, they've obviously got the picture that they can't possibly implicate people to pay tax when their input costs are soaring as well. So it's not going to change, is it? It's going to be as it is. Otherwise, you know, basically they're going to put everybody out of business that is doing this because there isn't that sort of margin. Whereas the people who are generating electricity from other sources, like renewables, as you say, don't have any increasing input costs. It's the same.
Yes.
So, yeah, all good. I think, as I've said before with MAST, it is low risk, high return investment, in my view. And, you know, it's an electricity generation. It's what we need. I mean, the country couldn't need it anymore if it tried over the next few years. And it isn't going to stop, is it? Because, I mean, they've even put this levy on these companies, I think, till, is it 2028? So, yes. You know, that what does that tell you? That tells you that the market is envisaged to stay bubbly and healthy in terms of the amount of cost it's going to be for electricity for the next 5 years, at least.
Yes.
You know, so absolutely. I think that gives you a great runway. You know, in that time frame, based on your presentation as well, you should have 300 megawatts. And it doesn't necessarily all be gas generation. You're going to have storage batteries. You're going to have all sorts of things in there as well, which I think, and the hydrogen move, I think, is going to be very, very useful as well for everybody in the world as well to take the reliance off the gas.
Yes, definitely. So, we're very excited about the future. We're very bullish. You know, as you very rightly said, now I think the next 5 years is very clearly laid out. But we are looking beyond that already, you know, 10, 15 years down the line. And as you know, as we discussed during one of the slides specifically, you know, our focus is on beyond the next 5 years. You know, what are we going to do? And we are already gearing toward that. And we are very excited to be part of this energy revolution and transition and to play our part in getting to net zero.
Yeah, great. So just so the listeners know, you'll be able to listen to this on the normal podcast, but there will also be, we're planning on putting a YouTube version up so you can see the slides as well. So if you've just listened and then you want to go back and see the slides, please go onto YouTube and you'll be able to do that. That's the Sunday Roast YouTube channel, and just click MAST and you should see it there.
Peter Krugel, CEO of MAST Energy Developments. Thanks very much for your time.
Excellent. Thank you, Phil. Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.